KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
30s.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. We were just hearing two Seattle entrepreneurs talking about dealing with disruption and uncertainty and chaos. How do you do that? That's a subject that Nassim Nicholas Taleb has studied as a businessman and as a trader, as a philosophical essayist and a professor based at the Polytechnic Institute of New York University and the University of Oxford. You might know his 2007 bestseller Black Swan about events thought improbable that occurred with massive consequences, things like 9/11 or the 2008 financial market crash, which he predicted. In his new book, Taleb explores the concept of anti-fragile. These are things that gain from disorder, that get stronger from stress. Nassim Taleb, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here. I'm a coffee drinker, I'm an author, and I'm a computer user. And
you're in the perfect place.
Exactly. This is the capital of books. And so thank you for inviting me.
Your goal, as you set it out, is to dominate the unseen, the unexplicable, inexplicable. That covers
for humans to dominate the unexplicable. In other words, you can't really forecast what's going on. You can't really understand randomness. By definition, it's random. What you could do is try to use it for you. The problem is we spend since the Enlightenment so much energy trying to predict complex events, and we can't. You know, the stock market tomorrow is unpredictable. We can put a man on the moon, and we can't figure out, what economic variables are going to do on Wednesday morning. You see, so the complex domain is very, very, very unpredictable. And the only way to approach it is rather focus on what we can measure, namely fragility, right? Mm-hmm. I can measure fragility. And once I mapped a good definition for fragility, I got this opposite, which is not robust. The opposite of the fragile is what gains from randomness. You see, the fragile doesn't want to be shaken. It wants peace and predictability. There's a coffee cup here. You definitely don't want an earthquake. No, you definitely don't want anyone to shake the furniture. Mm-hmm. You know, it wants peace. And the exact opposite is something that gains from disorder and randomness. So this category of object, beyond resilience and adaptability and all that, things that need randomness to function. You see, need variability, need volatility, need disorder. And when you look, you realize almost everything organic, you see, that's not like your computer doesn't want volatility, you see. Anything man-made, you breaks down, you know, if there's a shock or something. Mm-hmm. And they never heal on their own. Whereas, possibly, but very, very, very hard. Whereas things that are organic communicate with the environment via stressors.
You give the example of bones. You're a weightlifter,
exactly.
And bones get stronger when you put stress on them and strain on them to a certain extent.
So
and
always,
then they break.
Yeah, there's always some dose of randomness. But what happened is that they would break much faster if you didn't train them to have some stress. So what happened is that there's a mechanism of overcompensation in humans, in anything. You give it stress, say dose 100, it prepares for 110. And that's how it communicates with the environment. My skin gets darker because I'm Mediterranean in the summer, okay, to protect me from the sun. My mood swings also. You see, there are a lot of things that gain from variability and disorder, and we forget about them. Or sometimes we remember, like the doctor would tell you, listen, you need to go work out, go take a walk, it's good for you. And by the way, why don't you take these antibiotics, right? Mm-hmm. Well, weakening your system, because you need definitely to be constantly fighting something in your system. So since the Enlightenment, we started looking at engineering things, whereas before we did not. And engineering things are not anti-fragile. They can be, like the Brooklyn Bridge is never going to repair itself. It's robust. And things that are organic need stressors. And effectively, like my bones would be harmed if I spend 6 months in bed.
Now, I think this makes me think of things that technology, actually. One of the things that fascinates me about my cell phone is that the programs, not of their own, improve. I start it up and there's an update on the program. It makes it more robust, makes it less able to crash, makes it perhaps work in different environments. Is it true that there's nothing inorganic that can become anti-fragile?
It's not the computer that's improving. Right. It's a collection of programmers who are learning from mistakes. Actually, computers with time are getting more complex and more fragile, by the way. And so is programs and everything. But take a system that's composed of parts, okay, the overall system, if it's a good environment, benefits from the errors made by the parts. Or by the fragility of the part, even when they go bust. Like, for example, the restaurant business, without failure, will never deliver the good food you have. I'm going to have tonight because first time in Seattle. You see, without some failure. So what we have to do is learn how to mitigate the failure, not to make the stink very bad. But so there's systems. Like, for example, every bridge that collapses in a country makes the next bridge safer. Every building that collapses makes housing safer. But the problem, there are some systems, namely the banking system or some economic systems, where one failure increases the probability of other failures. So we have two environments,
yeah.
and one that learns from mistakes and one that is harmed by mistakes.
Nassim Nicholas Taleb is my guest. We're talking about anti-fragile. It's the name of his new book, and it's a concept. And I've been listening to you talk about it, and as I read the book, I thought of types of personalities who, when they're subjected to disorder and uncertainty, they become more calm and able to think through things and get things done. I'm thinking of Michael Jordan getting on the basketball court with 10 seconds left, a crazy, chaotic situation. Every player is going to go after him, and yet somehow he kind of consistently could go into a place where all that craziness around him brought out a strength of his. Are there personality types who are anti-fragile?
All of us, we all need some kind of trauma. There's something called post-traumatic growth that is not rarely discussed. We all need some kind of bounce back because you overcompensate for it. Just like when you lift 100 pounds, you overcompensate, your body prepares for 110. So when you get some trauma, your system overcompensates to get a little more, except, of course, if it breaks you, then you have problems. So we need some kind of... I think everyone has. Some people can tolerate it more than others. But nevertheless, there's something that people don't quite understand about humans. Humans, if you don't challenge them, don't work well. And for example, if I, start talking in a hardly audible tone, you see.
Please don't. Please speak up.
you would hear me a lot better.
That's true.
Because you would be forced to overcompensate. And one thing I learned when I was a betrayer is to whisper. Okay, and then people would hear what I'm saying, this is why writers like to work against resistance sometimes in cafes.
Yeah.
The overcompensation against noise allows you to concentrate. There's these mechanisms, and this is one reason why if you want to give a great speech, don't imitate a TV person, a TV announcer. You see, make people work hard to understand you.
Pull back a little bit.
Pull back just a little bit.
Yeah.
Not too much. A lot of people do better in calculus. I'm a professor now of engineering, and I noticed when I challenge students, they do a lot better. A lot of people do better in calculus 103 than calculus 101.
Mm-hmm.
You see, simultaneously.
You've got all kinds of examples. When you go to India, you drink a drop of water.
Just a drop, and so far, haven't been harmed, but just a drop because we need stress. I mean, what happened in modern life, everything is smooth. The stressor and variation, all these things are good for you. A little bit of mood swings, not too much, you see. Mm-hmm. We over-medicate people, but it's good. And the problem is by over-medicating people, you make them more fragile.
Yeah.
And we don't know how to deal with extremely ill. You see, instead of focusing, this is what's called interventionism. Like with the economy, Mr. Greenspan wanted to smooth out the cycle. Well, the cycle is good because it, it makes companies get stronger, you see. And effectively fragilize the economy, just like a forest when you have accumulation of flammable material and you haven't had fire in a long time. The longer you wait for a big fire, the worse it gets. So you need a little bit of to shake it up. So the point is that we have learned now recently, say last 200 years since the Enlightenment, to try to make life too easy. And we have succeeded in some parts, mm-hmm. You see. And this is why people have bad back. This is why we shouldn't be sitting, you and I. I work standing up, all right? I learned that while writing the book, incidentally. I just discovered that work standing up. And stuff like that don't make life too comfortable for you. Be subjected to variations. And the problem of what I call interventionism, making life too smooth everywhere,
sure.
That you expend so much energy at making things too comfortable that you don't have enough, you see, resources to really deal with extreme problems. Like we don't spend enough for emergency room, you see. We don't spend enough for the extremely ill because we spend all our resources on the mildly ill. you see.
Well, I wonder how this plays out in society, because one of the things that you say is that one thing that fragilizes our society is lack of skin in the game.
Yeah, skin in the game.
What do you mean by that?
Now, what happens is that when I look at systems, and you notice, that, you know, I think that everything works by fragility and anti-fragility, all right? Where some fragile is when you have more downside than upside, so you're harmed by volatility. And anti-fragile is when you have more upside than downside, so the system gains from errors, okay? Like the computer industry, for example, or a lot of things. So what happens, there are situations that are warped in a sense that we have bad incentives where someone makes the upside and someone else gets a downside. So the system becomes very fragile because of this bad incentive. And as example,
sure.
I offer the banks. Banks have, you know, bankers make all the money when they're right, and when they're wrong, we pay for it. You and I, April 15. That is fragilizing to the system, and this is someone transferring fragility from his, to the system and to others. Or say corporate, like corporate executives, they're not entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs have skin in the game. Corporate executives don't have skin in the game. So they have the upside. They try to please the security analysts so they can get a good bonus because the stock price is good and they got stock option, all that thing. But their company is not theirs, you see. They don't have skin in the game. Whereas you see entrepreneurs have a completely different approach to things.
Well, where does that lead you to when it comes to social welfare programs, which are for tech people?
Okay, no, I have a very strange approach, which in fact upsets both sides of the spectrum. I am against interventionism to make things comfortable. Like, I'm against giving one in 10 Americans is on some form of mental thing like Prozac or, you know. I'm against these, you know, to change variations, small up and down of society. I am for extremely stringent, treatment of the very ill. And in social welfare, I am for the support of the failure. You fail as a restaurateur, you get a badge of honor, you see. You get a prize, right? And you get a check because, you know what, we want to encourage you to take more risk.
Well, we already see that among entrepreneurs. We kind of already see that. A failure for an entrepreneur is kind of a badge of honor.
In this part of the country, not in New York.
Yeah.
In New York, failure is not considered very good. And let me tell you the other thing is that Obama and the government, all these people, who do they bail out? The bankers and someone who employs 600,000 employees or something like that. They did not bail out my barber, my Italian barber, in New York, who was complaining. He says, nobody would care if I hit, you know, my business hurt, nobody cared because we don't have a lobby, you mm-hmm. see. So what happens is that the government tends to bail out companies. I'm against that. I'm for bailing out individuals. It's very different. So, and only in extreme situations. So, I mean, there's an entire package that comes with the idea. But the point is that we spend too much in trying to smooth the business cycle. And now we ran out of money when it comes to, deal with extremely difficult situations.
Yeah, and I want to get to where you think we might be going when it comes to that. But you also have advice for an anti-fragile career, which you say actually should be dual careers. What do you mean?
It's what I call the barbell. The barbell situation is that take a portfolio. Okay, it's a lot better to have 80% or 90% or 70% of your money in very safe investments, like maximally safe, you know, cash or a hedge for inflation, and the remaining balance in extremely risky securities. The combination will be medium risk, but a lot more robust than purely medium risk. And I noticed that you can see it in nature. The chapter is called Why Not Marry the Rock Star, where you have female birds, for example, that are supposed to be monogamous. They marry the boring but stable bird, male, mm-hmm. that they have as official mate 90% of the time. And then when he's gone, they cheat with the rock star, you see, once in a while. That way they're ensuring a very safe progeny. And then for riders, I tell riders, don't go work as, don't debase your riding by doing anything in the middle. So work as a, if you're a philosopher or a writer, as doing something completely different. And then in your free time, keep your writing unadulterated, you see. And like Spinoza or Lance Maker, had he been in the philosophy department, he wouldn't have had the same Spinoza. Trollope was a postal worker. And you can see these people and I tell them, if you have a skill, have a job that you forget, 9-to-5 job, and you forget at 5 o'clock that you had it, right? You don't have to worry about it. And
how do you do that, Nassim?
Well, I started as a trader. You know, I started. So I spent 20 years as a trader. And a trader, you know, at 3 o'clock at a time. Market used to close at 3, now, you know, it's worse. And it was gone. That's it. I didn't have to think much about much of anything. So I, you know, spent 20 years refining my and it was perfect. And wrote under no pressure. And also started an academic career under no pressure. And I started publishing an academic paper under no pressure. Now that I became a full-time academic as a professor and you know, at major research university, I just realized I can't do any research anymore. You see, there's something about the system; it doesn't work. So this is what the best combination. I wanted to be initially a writer, and then later on, you know, I kept mutating. But the best thing it was in my family. They said those who wanted to be writers become diplomats, and it was a great combination. If you're unskilled, you become a diplomat. If you're skilled, you do something like a lensmaker.
Nassim Nicholas Taleb, you don't have words of comfort for us about the future of the economy. You predicted the 2008 collapse. You've written that the risks that were in the system 30 months ago are still with us now, and unless we lower debt to definancialize the economy, we face the risk of many more blow-ups.
This I wrote about 4 years ago, years ago. But the way I see things going that I'm now writing an op-ed for a newspaper where I explain what is the anti-fragile political economy, to summarize my books. And I you know, brought it down to very few points. The problem is that we made two mistakes over the last decade. In a complex system, mistakes cascade very quickly. And the first mistake was that war that cost us between 20 and 120 times, you know, what was, you know, we planned to spend. And then people claim that more than $3 trillion, you know, to fund the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. And the second one, the financial crisis from not understanding the system. Why? Because here you have a small number of decision makers and small number of decisions affecting the system. So mistakes percolate through the system. You see, whereas if you have take a bottom up decentralization, a lot of people make a lot of mistakes. You see, and it looks more volatile, but it's safer. You're never going to have a big mistake. And we had two of them last decade. So decentralization also, because a mayor has more skin in the game than a bureaucrat in Washington. So this is the first thing I'm recommending. The second one is lower debt. Mm-hmm. And because debt is very vicious in the system and makes the system more fragile.
You're kind of a small is beautiful guy.
And small is beautiful. Look, I proved in a book using my concept of fragility that small is not just more beautiful, it's vastly more efficient. You can see the numbers. I mean, that large is not efficient because a project of 100 million pounds has 30% more cost overruns in UK than projects of 5 million pounds.
Nassim Nicholas Taleb, thank you so much for stopping by. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for inviting me.
And the new book is called Anti-Fragile: Things That Gain from Disorder, That Get Stronger from Stress. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, you've been listening to The Conversation, produced by David Hyde with Arwen Nix, production help from Cameron Drews. Andy Hurst is the engineer. I'm Ross Reynolds. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.